identify terrorists, killers, who were coming into Jerusalem. She frowned.
How were you able to do that?
He didn't think it was the right time, so he waved off the question. That's not important right now. The important part, one of the pieces of the puzzle that I think involves you, is that we captured a suicide bomber before he could detonate his bomb vest.
That's fortunate.
Yes, but the strange thing is, the guy was Mexican. He only spoke Spanish. He said he was born in Mexico.
Angela's expression darkened. Mexican.
A Mexican suicide bomber in Jerusalem.
That seems pretty strange.
They'd never had it happen before. But the key thing is, he was supposed to blow himself up in the attack. Had he succeeded, we would never have known that he only speaks Spanish.
He could see that behind her eyes the wheels were turning.
One of my talents is that I find connections in things that at first don't seem like they fit together.
You mean your work on connections like the captured Mexican suicide bomber and Casiel crossing into the U.S. from Mexico?
That's part of it, he said,
watching her face as she started putting pieces together in her own mind. Casiel could pass for Mexican, she said as she stared off.
He speaks several languages. Spanish is one of them.
Jack smiled.
That was my thought. It's a connecting thread, but I don't know what it means.
She looked back at him. What does this have to do with me? Why are you telling me this?
I found you because Casiel killed people in Italy with the name Constantine. I read the report about your grandparents' murder. No one was ever charged with their murder. I thought it had to be Casiel who killed them.
It was.
Yes, well, I know that now because you just told me he did. But before, none of us knew that for sure. The thing is, one of the other pieces of the puzzle, one of the seemingly disparate facts that has me troubled, is you.
Me?
Why me? I know that you were attacked by four Hispanic men. They intended to kill you, and almost succeeded. I wondered why they would do that. Casiel wants to kill you, but why did they? The only thing I could come up with was that after they raped you, maybe they wanted to eliminate you as a witness. But I have this uneasy feeling that there's more to it. Some other connection to all these things I'm trying to fit together.
There is.
Like what?
They weren't Hispanic, she said. He remembered that Jose, the Mexican suicide bomber, only spoke Spanish, and yet he didn't know anything about Santiago de Querétaro in Mexico, where he was supposedly born.
What do you mean? Every report I saw said they were four Hispanic men.
She shook her head. They weren't Hispanic. I told the police they were because that's what I thought when they first came into the bar. That's all the police needed to know.
You're sure they weren't Hispanic?
Positive.
Did they speak Spanish?
Yes. Spanish and English with a broken Spanish accent.
Then what makes you think they weren't Hispanic?
She smiled to herself just a little. Do you think Mexicans hate America?
No, not really.
Neither do I. These guys did. They despise America with every fiber of their being. That hate for America defines them.
Jack shrugged. Okay, so then what do you think they are?
Middle Eastern? Muslim of some kind. My guess is Iranian.
Iranian?
Jack leaned in a little, frowning at this young woman who an hour ago he would not have believed would even know that Iran was mostly a Muslim nation.
Okay, now you have my attention. Why do you say Iranian?
They called America the Great Satan. That's what I always hear Iran calling America, the Great Satan. They also called me things like a dirty American whore, that kind of stuff. The kind of things the Iranians and terrorists say about us. They hold women in especially low esteem.
I was no more than dirt to them, so they thought they had every right, as men, to use my body. But if they were trying to pass as Mexican, why would they say those things in front of you?
Because they intended to kill me. They thought I wouldn't be alive to repeat any of it to the authorities and blow their cover, so they felt safe in being themselves in front of me.
Wow, Jack said as he leaned back. But they didn't decide to kill me because they didn't want me to be able to identify them. They intended to kill me from the first because they received orders to do so.
Jack came up off the seat back.
Orders? What orders? Orders from who?
Orders that came in the package I delivered to them. I have a courier service. I delivered a package to them, to Heartland Irrigation, and inside there was a letter ordering them to kill the courier.
Jack stared off into the darkness as he thought about it. Do you know what was in the package?
Angela shrugged. Some kind of long tubes. They were clear. I could see wires inside the tubes.
Jack stared at her a moment. Can you describe the wires?
Well? Wait, she pulled out her phone. Let me see if I can find a picture of what the wires looked like.
She typed something into a search engine. She clicked a lot of screens looking for one that had the right kinds of pictures. When the images came up, she started flicking her finger to scroll down through dozens of pages of photos, all the time murmuring, "No, no, no." After searching for a time, she abruptly halted. She enlarged a picture and then turned the phone toward him so he could see.
"These wires," she said. "They looked just like these. They were in tubes with red caps, just like this. The wires even had the little thingamajigs on the ends, like the wires in this photo."
Jack could feel the blood drain from his face.
"That's exploding bridge wire."
Angela wrinkled up her nose.
"What's an exploding bridge wire?"
"It's used to detonate a series of explosives at precisely the same time."
"Why would you need to do that?"
"To detonate an atomic bomb."
49. Several of those troubling little pieces, the little worry tiles that Jack had been turning over and over in his mind, trying to understand, were suddenly coming together to form a terrifying picture.
"An atom bomb?" Angela said. "Are you fucking kidding me?"
"No. I'm dead serious. Exploding bridge wire is difficult to purchase legally, so a terrorist organization wouldn't want to try to buy it here for fear of raising a red flag with authorities. If they want to remain undetected, it would be far better for them to send it secretly. Terrorists operating in coordination with the Ministry of Intelligence for Iran will typically send critical items or messages through networks of agents, MOIS intelligence officers assigned to foreign missions and embassies in most countries. But that's risky in the U.S., because any of those people very likely would be under surveillance by any number of the U.S. intelligence services. With something this critical, instead of using their own agents, they sometimes use a series of couriers, innocent, unwitting mules. Only the final courier in that web of couriers is provided the final destination. That's why you were to be killed and your body disposed of where it wouldn't be found. They didn't want the final courier to be able to reveal where you took the package. At least, you were supposed to be dead."
Angela leaned in toward him. "You mean to tell me you think these people posed as Mexicans so they could smuggle in the stuff they need to make an atom bomb? Do you seriously think that's what's going on?"
"That suicide bomber we captured, the one who said he was Mexican, had a small bit of plutonium-239 stuck in his shoe. Plutonium is used to make atomic bombs. Along with a lot of other parts, you need exploding bridge wire to detonate it."
Angela held up a hand to stop him. "All right, but just because you have the plutonium, that doesn't mean you could really make an atom bomb. If it was that easy, terrorists everywhere would be doing it. It can't be that easy. Lots of countries who would like a nuclear bomb aren't able to build one.
So if they can't, why do you think these terrorists can?
It's not really the same thing. The bombs some countries are trying to build are different and for a different purpose. Their bombs need to be much more sophisticated. They need to have precise and predictable yields. They ultimately need to be small enough to fit in a delivery system like a missile. Most importantly, they need to have safety features and fail-safe devices. None of that matters to a terrorist, because their needs are much simpler. It's not out of the question that they might be able to build a crude device. It wouldn't have the precision yield of a military device, but that wouldn't be important to terrorists. What do they care if it ends up being 100 kilotons or 200 kilotons? Any nuclear device in that range, pretty much regardless of size, would be devastating to America. They wouldn't care all that much about the risk of accidental detonation, especially if they're building the bomb here in the U.S., so they wouldn't need those safeguards. A nuke going off anywhere in the U.S. is a catastrophe. As for the plutonium and the necessary technical expertise, there are any number of rogue states, Iran, North Korea, Pakistan, who would be only too happy to provide expertise and materials. Crippling the great Satan with a nuke would suddenly make them and those rogue nations dominant world powers to be reckoned with.
Angela shook her head as she sat back. I'm still not convinced I believe all this.
Why attack a border crossing?
I don't... Angela snapped her fingers with sudden realization. Islamic terrorists know that they may not be able to blend in very well or go unnoticed. So having all their people pose as Hispanic would allow them to be practically invisible in America. They could come and go as they please. Blowing up a border crossing would destroy the detection equipment that surely must be able to detect nuclear material.
Jack was amazed at how quickly she had made the critical jump to what was going on and why. He turned in his seat to face her.
Angela, if you delivered the EBW here, that means they're probably building the bomb here before transporting it to a major city. If they wanted to use it in L.A., they would have built it on the West Coast. That means they likely intend to set it off in New York City.
Milford Falls isn't that far from New York City.
Where was the place you delivered that package?
I've already been there looking for those four men. They've cleared out.
Take me there. I want to see it for myself.
She looked out the windshield, almost as if she could see the place. I was going there now anyway. I suppose I could take you along.
Why would you be going there now, in the middle of the night?
I made a promise. I intend to keep it.
Jack thought he knew what she meant.
Is it far?
Not too far. But I wouldn't get my hopes up if I were you. It's in a massive, deserted industrial area. It's easy to get lost in there. I suspect those men are still there, somewhere in those deserted buildings. Now I know why. I've been going there a lot, spending time learning the layout of the place.
Looking for those men?
Yes, she admitted. But so far, I haven't seen any sign of them.
Jack rubbed a finger along his lower lip. Such a deserted industrial complex sounded like the perfect place to build a bomb without being disturbed or discovered.
I need to find out if this is just a scary theory or if we could really be onto something. There might be a clue at the place where you delivered the package.
I'm game.
Angela turned the key, and the engine roared to life.
50. They had to drive back through town first before they could get to the old industrial area. The main streets were mostly deserted. Jack's familiar sense of paranoia was beginning to set in. With so few cars on the streets, he felt like anyone could be watching them. At one traffic light, some guys in a car pulled up beside them on the driver's side. The driver revved the engine as some of the men opened their windows to make lewd offers to Angela. Angela glared at them as she gave them the finger. They all laughed like it was the funniest thing in the world.
Jerks, she muttered as she pulled away when the light turned green. They stayed next to her. She abruptly cut around a corner to the right. She had turned too late for them to follow without stopping and backing up. By then she was gone. She took side streets for a while until returning to her course through downtown. The men were nowhere to be seen. Jack knew that she could have ignored them. It said something about her nature that she didn't. They wouldn't think it was so funny if they had followed her and stopped her truck only to find themselves looking down the barrel of her gun. She might not look it, but this was a woman you messed with at your own peril. The fact that she went out all alone to a deserted area late at night, hoping to find the guys who had tried to kill her, also said a lot. Jack had only met this woman, and already he felt a bond with her. It was rare to encounter another person who shared an understanding of the things he dealt in, and more than rare that she was prepared to handle them alone. As they left the lights of Milford Falls behind, they drove for a time down a lonely, winding highway. Trees in the darkness to either side of the road flashed by in a seemingly never-ending procession until the road eventually emptied them out in the middle of a vast, deserted commercial landscape. It was an eerie scene. Lit by moonlight, the place felt like life on Earth had died out long ago, and they were the last people alive in the world, wandering among the crumbling remains of civilization. Angela drove slowly into the maze, looking left and right around every building. He could see windows broken out on most of the buildings. All of them were dark. After they made their way through the tangle of deserted buildings, stacked industrial equipment, and fenced implement yards, she turned down a road going past a long building and then parked at a door along the side. The door had a hand-painted address on it. "This is where I delivered the package," she said as she cut the engine. "If you want to look around inside, I'll keep watch out here." Jack thought that wasn't a bad idea, but at the same time he didn't think it was a good one, either. "All right. I'll try to be quick." "It's pitch black in there," she said. He pulled out his small light and clicked it on briefly to show her how powerful it was. The door wasn't locked. It scraped on the ground as he opened it. Inside the enormous building, there were walls for several rudimentary offices. Between several of the office spaces stood gray metal shelving. Some of the shelves had crumpled, dirty blankets left on them, but there was nothing underneath. There was a filthy, greasy moving pad on the floor. He knew why Angela hadn't wanted to come inside. Jack looked around for a good 10 minutes, trying to find a clue as to what the men had been doing. He found a variety of milling machines back beyond the shelving, but they had been cleaned and the floor vacuumed. A specialized search team could probably find a speck of something, but he couldn't. Since the site had been abandoned at this point, with the clock ticking, whatever had been there was irrelevant. They needed to find where whatever they had been making had been taken. As he climbed back up into her truck, she said, "Told you." Jack sighed. "They appeared to have been using milling machines for something. Like you said, they've cleared out. It was worth a look. I don't know what else we can do out here." She started the truck, but didn't answer. She pulled out and drove slowly on through the maze of crumbling buildings, chain-link fencing and razor wire guarding piles of rusted junk. There were broad concrete areas as well, and streets of sorts, even alleyways between clusters of the old buildings.
"Are you going to turn on your headlights?"
"No. The moon is out. The moon is enough to see by if you don't drive too fast. Your eyes will adjust." Jack didn't object. He knew what she was doing, and he couldn't say he blamed her. Besides that, those men were the only clue they had. If by some stroke of luck she was able to find them, they might be able to provide some answers. The problem would be getting them to talk. They drove slowly for almost an hour, weaving their way among the ruins of what used to be a thriving complex. Angela didn't say anything. She was intently focused on surveying the moonlit ghost town. Jack hadn't had much sleep on the plane the night before, and he was exhausted. The low rumble of the engine was making him even more sleepy. He slumped down in his seat. He could feel the engine's low drone through his whole body. He was having trouble keeping his eyes open as she drove slowly onward into the decaying ghost town.
"Shit," Angela said under her breath. "I don't believe it."
Jack sat up, suddenly wide awake.
"What?"
She rolled to a stop and turned off the engine.
"There," she said, pointing through the windshield.
Jack squinted into the distance and finally saw a small orangish glow get brighter, then dim. It was a man, smoking a cigarette. He was coming out of an alleyway and across the road they were on. Jack then spotted another man walking beside him. He was smoking, too. The two glowing dots moved along with the shadowy shapes of the two men crossing their path, their faces briefly lit whenever they took a drag.
"That's them," Angela said in a whisper.
Angela reached up and turned off the switch for the interior light before carefully opening her door. Jack got out with her. They both pushed their doors closed quietly, just enough to catch, but not letting them latch so they wouldn't make a noise.
"Do you really think it's the men you're looking for?"
he whispered.
"It's Miguel and Emilio."
"Two of the men who attacked you? Are you sure?"
"Positive."
She sounded convinced. He didn't know that he was. He thought that it might simply be two vagrants. He couldn't make out any features of the two dark shapes silhouetted against moonlit concrete and brick of abandoned factories. Angela was convinced, though, and she was already moving out ahead of him. Jack pulled one of his knives out of a pocket and popped the blade open. She walked on the balls of her feet, making virtually no sound. The way she moved reminded him of a large cat advancing in on prey. She would freeze in place, watching, motionless, then move again in short dashes. Jack stayed close, trying to mimic her movements. As he started to hear their voices chattering in Spanish, she moved slowly as she kept her eyes locked on the men. When they talked and laughed and looked the other way, pointing off at something, she moved more swiftly. Jack was surprised that she still hadn't drawn her gun as she closed the distance to the men. He was alarmed when she suddenly broke into a run. As fast as she was moving, and with her long legs, before he knew it, she had opened some distance out ahead of him. He was even more alarmed that she didn't have a weapon in hand as she rapidly closed the distance to the men. Both men halted abruptly when they saw her coming. They flicked their cigarettes off to the side and drew big knives. Jack could see the moonlight glint off the combat blades. They started running toward her. It seemed insane. A girl in cut-off shorts and boots with no weapon to hand, her platinum-colored hair flying out behind her, her arms pumping as she charged at a dead run toward two men with knives. Jack didn't think this would end well, and it was too late to stop her. 51. Just before Angela reached the men, she bent down without slowing and snatched up something. Jack thought that it looked like a metal rod of some kind, possibly a length of rebar, about 3 feet long. She must have seen it lying there in the moonlight when she broke into a dead run. She had been trying to get to it before the men with large knives reached her. As the men charged toward her, she abruptly stopped. She twirled the rebar in her fingers like a high school cheerleader twirling a baton. Just before the men reached her, she tossed it up in the air and caught it by one end. Holding it like a baseball bat, she took a mighty swing as the man out in front reached her. Her swing connected with the man's hand as if she were knocking a ball out of the park. His knife flew away into the night. He let out a cry of pain as he crumpled to a knee. Angela used her swing to spin herself around and slam the rebar into the other man's forearm just as he tried to stab her. Jack could hear the bone break. Holding his broken arm, the man staggered back a few steps. The first man had scrambled back to his feet and recovered his balance. He lunged at her to catch her in his arms. Gripping the rebar in both hands as he came at her, she rammed it, end first, into his face so hard that it speared all the way through his skull and broke out the back. The man's dead weight twisted as he toppled, ripping the metal rod through his head from her grasp. Angela ducked into a squat as the second man leaped toward her. His arm reaching out for her went over her head. Angela pulled a large knife from her right boot. As the man was still staggering past her after missing, she pivoted and with two lightning strikes sliced through his Achilles tendons. He howled in pain and shock when the tendons snapped back up into his legs, the calf muscles pulling up into fat knots of unconnected muscle. He tried to walk on stilted legs but toppled to the ground. He sat up, trying to reach his crippled legs with his one good hand. Angela threw a side kick into his face, slamming him back down onto his back. Without an instant's hesitation, she landed on him, straddling his chest with her bare legs. She pressed the point of her knife to the fleshy spot just below his left eye, right above the cheekbone. Blood ran from his broken nose. It was clear to Jack that if he moved, he would gouge out his own eye. The man knew that as well, and froze.
"Well, well, well. If it isn't Miguel, leader of his merry little band of rapists."
"Sorry. I am truly sorry, señorita,"
he pleaded, holding his hands up to the side in surrender. Angela smiled.
"I seriously doubt that you're the least bit sorry, at least not yet. But you will be."
"Where did you take the material you made?"
Jack asked from over her shoulder.
"The Semtex explosive you were working on. Where did you take it?"
Jack put a hand on Angela's shoulder, not knowing for sure what she had in mind.
"Angela," he cautioned in a low voice for her alone, "we need to get information from this man."
She shot a look of fury back over her shoulder.
"Oh, he's going to give us information. You don't need to worry about that."
She turned back to the man under her.
"Isn't that right, Miguel? You're going to give us the information we want, right?"
"Please, please, señorita, I am so sorry."
"Answer my friend's question. Where is the material I saw when I delivered the package to you? Where did you take it?"
"I don't know, I swear."
At his denial, and without hesitation, Angela pushed the knife in under his eye and levered it underneath, popping the eyeball out enough for her to rip it out with her other hand. She held the mess of it in her bloody fingers up in front of his good eye as he shrieked and flopped under her.
"Stop screaming or your tongue is next."
She didn't raise her voice. She was so calm, so dead serious, that it made her words far more frightening. The man wept in terror, but he stopped shrieking.
"Please, no more."
He suddenly reached for her hair with his good hand to try to gain control of her. Jack was just about to intervene to protect her when, with two swift slashes, she cut the tendons in the crook of his arm and then at his shoulder. The nearly useless arm dropped to the concrete as he shrieked in pain. She put the point of the knife in his mouth to make him go quiet.
"I'll ask you again. Where is the material I saw when I delivered the package to you? I want you to think very carefully before you answer, because if you lie to me again, I'm going to start cutting things off you, things you would not like to be without."
She put the point of her knife against his cheek and, with a quick circular motion, cored out one of his larger moles. He cried out, "I'm going to cut off something more important if you don't tell us what we want to know." To make her point, she moved back, stabbed her knife into his leg, making him gasp, and then pulled the double-edged blade up the length of his pants. The blade was so sharp it cut through his pants, underwear, and leather belt. With the tip of the blade, she flopped the front of his pants and underwear to the side.
"There's your disgusting little balls now." She leaned closer.
"Why, Miguel, this little dick of yours is all shriveled up. Not so much fun like the last time you showed it to me, right, Miguel?" The man was trembling in agony and fright. Tears streamed from his good eye. Blood ran from the empty socket as well as his broken nose. As afraid as Miguel was, in as much pain as he was, he rolled his head from side to side to let her know he wasn't going to talk. He looked prepared to let her do her worst, to die for his beliefs, but he was not going to reveal any information. His willingness to die before revealing anything was where interrogations usually hit a wall. This was already well beyond the bounds of civilized men. But Jack believed these terrorists were assembling a nuclear bomb. If this man didn't talk, Jack was going to have to call in help. It could easily be too late by the time they searched the entire complex, or worse, for all Jack knew, they could have already loaded that bomb into a truck and be driving into a major city. There was simply no time to waste. Jack would normally have stopped her long ago from what she was doing to this man, but this was that hypothetical situation come to life of what you would be willing to do to get information out of a terrorist if you knew hundreds of thousands of people would die if you didn't get him to talk. This was no longer about what was proper or right, but about the survival of untold numbers of innocent people. Jack contemplated having Angela move aside to let him try, but she was locked on to this man in a way that was profoundly frightening. Something told him to stay out of it. Angela scooted back up to again sit on his abdomen to hold him down, not that he was going anywhere. She placed the tip of her knife under his right eye. "I think that by now you know I don't believe you, and you also know that I'm not playing games. Maybe you had some grand vision of dying a glorious death, striking a blow for your idiotic cause. Maybe you even thought that if you got caught, you would be put in prison and that no one would hurt you because Americans always treat terrorists with respect and they don't believe in behaving in the same barbaric way you do. Well, Miguel, here's your problem. If you would have been caught by the authorities, it's true that they would likely take you to some nice cozy prison cell in Guantanamo where you would be given prayer rugs and time to pray to Allah every day, food to keep away the pain of hunger, medical care, and outside playtime in the sunshine with the other killers being held there so as not to offend your dignity. But I'm not with any of those authorities, so you're fucked. No nice prison cell for you where you can shout your hate to the guards, spit at them, throw your shit at them, and laugh at how soft the Americans are with all their rules. You get none of that, because this isn't about you being a terrorist. This is personal. You raped me. You hung me up by a rope around my neck. You thought I was going to die. But I didn't die. You are my captive now. Not the American authorities. And unlike them, I don't give a fuck about rules. There is no one here to keep me from doing whatever I want with you. And believe me, I have lots of things that I want to do to you. Things I dreamed about when I was in the hospital. You long for nothing more than to be a killer of innocent women and children in the name of your cause or your god of whatever fucking lunatic gibberish you people thought up while wiping your asses with rocks. You live in filth because you are filth. You hunger to kill people who can't fight back because you are murderers. That's all you are. Murderers. Nothing more. Nothing noble. Just common killers. For that, you are going to suffer at my hands. No rules. No law. No salvation. Just you and me.
I will give you... nothing, he managed to say in a pant,
spittle bubbles forming at the corners of his mouth, defiance in his voice.
You are nothing but an American whore. You are dirt to me. I welcome death. I tell you nothing. I am prepared to die.
That was it. Jack knew that whatever else she did to him, he was prepared to take it. He was prepared for the pain. Typical of terrorists, he worshipped death, so he welcomed death.
Die? Who said anything about dying?
We will strike you all down. You will get nothing from me. Never. I will die as a martyr.
Angela looked up over her shoulder and smiled at Jack. He had absolutely no idea why. She turned the smile back down at the man bleeding under her.
That's okay, Miguel, she patted his cheek. That's okay. You really don't need to tell me.
Because you will get nothing. Allah will reward me. New York City is going to vanish under a mushroom cloud far bigger than the bomb at Hiroshima.
Angela laughed. She actually laughed. Jack was getting worried. The clock was ticking on a nuclear weapon. He knew these kinds of terrorists. They really were happy to die for their cause. They believed they would live beyond death to look down on the destruction of their great Satan.
I don't think so, she said, still smiling, like she thought he was a funny little man.
Yes, you will, because I will tell you nothing.
You don't have to, Miguel. You don't need to tell me anything. She patted his cheek again. It's okay, Miguel.
He panted for a moment, wincing from the pain. His curiosity finally got the better of him.
What do you mean?
Angela shrugged. We'll simply bring in the dogs. He stopped breathing for a second.
Dogs?
52. Dogs? Jack didn't know what she was talking about either.
That's right, she told Miguel. Didn't you ever see tracking dogs in that shithole where you lived and practiced killing innocent people? How long has it been since you took a bath? Huh, Miguel? A week? 2 weeks? When you raped me and I had a chance to smell your filthy body up close and personal, I guessed it had been a month. Tracking dogs, you see, can track lost kids, lost people, abducted people, all kinds of people, and I'd bet all of those people had bathed within a day or two. So I don't imagine that tracking dogs would have the slightest trouble tracking your stink back to the place where you and your goat-fucking friends are building that bomb. So you see, she patted his cheek again, it's okay. We don't really need you to talk. We'll just let the dogs come get a sniff of your stinking ass, and they'll lead us right back to your friends. After that, she cut the side of his left arm, making him flinch. I'm going to cut off this arm right about here. It's useless now, anyway. Then I'll put a tourniquet around the stump so you don't bleed to death. She grinned down at him. Do you know what I'm going to do with you then? Miguel, his one eye wide, shook his head. Then I'm going to take you back over to that building where you strung me up by that rope and left me hanging by my neck to choke to death. He let out a whine. Oh, don't worry. I'm not going to hang you like you hanged me. She swept a hand before him. Put that thought right out of your mind. It seemed like an eternity to me as I was hanging there, unable to get a breath, choking to death. But I imagine that in reality it wouldn't have taken long to die that way. It would have soon been over.
You see, he said in defense, we wanted you to die quickly. We had mercy on you to give you a quick death, so you would not suffer.
That's nice, she said, smiling down at him again. But you haven't earned the right to die quickly. What I'm going to do with you, my little rapist killer zealot, is strip you naked like I was, but rather than hang you by your neck, I'm going to hang you by that stump of a left arm. You know what I'm going to do then? He was too transfixed by her to answer. Then I'm going to let those dogs that tracked your scent back to your friends come in and have at you as you hang there, helpless.
Dogs?
He whined. A pack of big dogs like that? Will go all crazy wild over fresh meat. They will strip your leg muscles right off the bone and eat it while you watch, unable to do anything to stop it. Since you'll be naked, the dominant dog will likely go for your genitals first. Do you know what the English word genitals means, Miguel? When he didn't answer, she jostled them with the tip of her knife. It means these little boys here. Dogs like these tender parts. It's a prized treat. Her voice was so calm, so soft, so sexy, that she was even frightening Jack. The man under her cried out in realization of his ignoble fate. She let him weep and tremble for a moment, then she leaned in again. Do you want to know what else I'm going to do to you when you're hanging there in that lonely building, much like you did to me? Miguel? Terrified, he could only shake his head. She poked his abdomen with her knife, not enough to stab him, but enough for him to feel it and flinch and for it to bleed. I'm going to stick my knife into you right down here, just enough for me to be able to reach in with a finger and hook your intestine. Then I'll pull out a few feet of it, kind of like I did with your eyeball, you know? I'm going to let that few feet of your gut dangle out of you while you hang there, helpless. Do you know why I'm going to do that? Because dogs love entrails. They'll grab hold of that bit of your intestine, and they'll pull and pull, tugging more out, fighting over it, yanking, tossing their heads from side to side to get it free, pulling more and more of it out of you while some of the other dogs start to fight over your genitals, tearing at them from either side. Every agonizing day you hang there, still alive, the meat hanging off your bones, every horrifying hour, every terrifying, torturous second that will seem like it lasts forever, you will wish for nothing more from your God than to die a quick death. But your God will not come to grant you that quick death. The dogs, though, when they get hungry, will wake from their nap to rip some more meat from your bones. She grabbed his right wrist and twisted it. And bones can hurt a lot, Miguel. Jack could hear the bone in his broken forearm crunch and grind together as she twisted his wrist back and forth. Miguel shrieked in pain, his cries turning to sobs at what awaited him. Jack could see that the man was starting to go into shock. She didn't have much time left to get him to confess what he knew. He thought she knew it as well. So, Miguel, I'm going to give you this one last chance to spare yourself that very, very long, agonizing, humiliating death for nothing. One last chance to answer before we bring in the dogs. One last chance to tell me where your friends are, to tell me where they are building that bomb. One last chance to earn yourself a quick death so you can go be with Allah. But if you don't want to tell me, she said as she patted his cheek again, that's all right. We will simply go get the dogs and they will track your stink back to them in no time. She leaned in and looked into his eye. Time's up. Miguel shook and cried as he muttered prayers in Spanish. Finally, he lifted his broken right arm over his chest and pointed the best he could to his left. I need more than that, she said, sounding totally unimpressed.
That way, Miguel said. The way you saw us coming from. Go that way until you get to the yard with all the train axles. Turn left. Go maybe 300 meters until you see an alleyway to your right. If you look down that alleyway, you will see the end of a big brick building with an arched roof. You will see a rolling door on the end. That is where the others are.
Angela looked back up at Jack. He nodded that he believed the man. Thinking they had tracking dogs meant they would quickly find where he had come from anyway. Tracking dogs meant he would suffer for nothing. That ruse had taken all the fight out of him. Resistance had become pointless in his mind. Do you remember my promise to all of you when you were beating me nearly to death?
No, señorita, he whined.
She put the tip of her knife on his chest, just off to the left side of his breastbone. I promised to kill all of you, remember? He nodded, reluctantly. You should have believed me. I've killed your three buddies, this one tonight and the other two when you drove up to my house. Remember? Only you are left. All your training, all that planning, and all that work you've all done is going to mean nothing now that you have betrayed all your friends. Angela rose up enough to put both hands on the end of the knife handle as she stiffened her arms. Oh, and Miguel? I want you to know. We don't have any dogs. He cried out at realizing he had been tricked. She dropped her full weight onto the knife. It sliced his heart in half, and he was dead in seconds. Jack wiped sweat from his face. That was the most brutal interrogation he had ever witnessed, and he had witnessed a number of them in other countries. It was also the most efficient and effective. This woman was utterly ruthless. He could have stopped it at any time, and might have, except that he was now sure that these terrorists had a nuclear weapon. It was viable, and they were on the brink of using it. If that happened, New York City would become a radioactive wasteland. The electromagnetic pulse from that bomb would likely knock out all electronic and electrical devices for a large part of the East Coast. The consequences for the country were unimaginable. The world would be forever changed. At that moment, in this place, in a situation this incredibly dangerous, he doubted anyone but this girl with her knife could have gotten the information any faster. He didn't really know anything about her life, but everything in her life had led her to being the right person in the right place at the right time. In the end, it wasn't really the torture. It was the trick she had played on him. The word picture she had painted in his mind about the dogs, the things she had already done, gave her the credibility to make that trick work. She had blood on her hands and arms, almost up to her elbows. Her bare legs were smeared with blood. "I know that what you just did was far from easy or pleasant, but I hope you will take comfort in knowing that you may have just saved the lives of countless people."
"Are you kidding?" She swiped some hair off her cheek with the back of her wrist. The blood on her matched her lipstick. "I haven't felt this alive for a long time."
Jack again wondered who the hell he was dealing with. Angela pointed off into a weedy area.
"Help me drag these two over there."
Jack peered off into the moonlit weeds.
"Why?"
"We can't afford to have any lookouts patrolling the area discover them and send up an alarm. There's a cistern over there. We can dump them down inside."
That actually made sense. "How do you know there's a cistern over there?" Jack asked, as they each grabbed one of Miguel's legs.
"Because," she said as they dragged him close and dropped his legs, "I met a man once who dumped the body of a girl with red hair down there. I recognized the place from seeing it in his mind."
Jack slid the heavy lid aside as he shot her a suspicious look.
"What happened to him?"
"He went down a different hole."
Jack was having a hard time keeping up with everything he was learning about her. It was obvious that her interrogation technique wasn't something she'd thought up on the spot. Not many people would have had the stomach to do that to another human being, regardless of what they were guilty of. She seemed to relish it. Of course, after what they had done to her, he supposed he couldn't blame her. Once they had dumped both men down into the cistern, Angela went back for the eyeball she had cut out and tossed it in. Jack slid the lid back on. They needed to hurry and find the place where the men were building an atom bomb. Jack hoped they weren't already on the road with it.
"We had better get going," he said. "We may not have much time to stop them."
53.
"Wait back here,"
Jack whispered. He was thankful that Angela didn't argue. He left her in the alleyway behind a partially crumbled brick wall and then moved on alone into the moon's shadow cast by the large building with the arched roof. As far as he could see, the only windows in the long building were up high, mainly for ventilation and to let daylight in. He moved quietly along the entire length of the building, looking for a way to see inside. The building was brick and had stood the test of time. Around the back there were steel doors, but they were all locked. He might have been able to break into them, but not without making enough noise to send up an alarm. For all he knew, they could even be booby-trapped. There was a rolling door at the back of the building, but it too was locked. When he reached the far side of the building, he found a shed of some sort. It had been built right up next to the main building. He climbed on a heap of discarded diesel engine blocks and gears stacked beside the shed, and then used the gutter to help him climb up onto the roof. Standing on the roof of the shed, he found a place where the brick was broken up around a jagged vertical crack in the outer wall of the main building. Jack pushed on the bricks around the broken area, looking for any that were loose. He found several. After jiggling them a little to see how easily he would be able to pull them out, he found one that was looser than the others. He carefully wiggled it out, inch by inch, being careful to make sure none of the other bricks would come tumbling down. He was armed only with a couple of small knives. He knew how to use them, and they were often better in close quarters, but they were no match for guns at a distance. He had learned that lesson the last time he had brought a knife to a gunfight. It did not end well. He had spent months in a coma, and then recovering in the hospital. If that experience taught him anything, it was that he didn't want to get shot again. It had also lost him Kate. She believed he was dead, and so she had gone off the grid to keep any super predators from finding her. Unfortunately, Jack couldn't find her either. It was discouraging to try so hard and not even be able to get any leads on her whereabouts. At the same time, he was, in a way, happy about it because she was keeping herself safe from any killers who might also be trying to find her. After he had finally managed to wiggle the brick out of its place in the wall, he carefully set it down against a ledge so it wouldn't fall off the roof and possibly alert the men inside. He leaned down and squinted through the hole to see what he could of what was inside. The first thing he saw almost made him fall off the roof. There, in the middle of the room, was a spherical device about 3 feet in diameter. Several men were holding half of a metal outer shell up to it, as another group of men were feeding a mass of wires through an opening in the shell. A cargo van sat not far away, both of its back doors wide open. A bundle of electrical cables hung out the back. The bomb didn't look like some of the more sophisticated devices he'd seen, but with all the clues finally making sense, he didn't doubt that at a minimum he was looking at a crude nuclear weapon. Except it wasn't nearly as crude as he would have hoped. This was a relatively sophisticated device, and he would bet that its yield was enough to take out much of a big city like New York. He could see machined brass sleeves for the exploding bridge wire already placed in the Semtex. The way the explosive was precisely shaped into geometric pieces that were being assembled into a sphere looked to have been done with care and precision. The plutonium-239 the Mossad had found in the tread of Jose's boot was bomb-grade plutonium, which told him that it surely had a plutonium pit. He could see the lead shielding of the tamper beneath where the Semtex was still being placed. For the moment, where the plutonium for the bomb had come from was irrelevant. The only thing that mattered was that it was here, now. Jack was sure now that this was undoubtedly the reason they had blown up the Oeste Mesa border crossing. They used the diversion of all the other terrorist attacks to dilute the importance of that one. Different terrorist organizations claiming credit for various attacks created confusion among the intel agencies as to what was going on. That confusion had helped them to get the plutonium pit and associated material needed for the bomb across the border and into the United States. Everyone thought all those attacks were the big event. The other terrorists might not have realized they were pawns being used as a diversion. But they had served the desired purpose anyway. And while all that was going on, this group had gotten the most crucial material for their bomb into the country. Everyone was searching the country for Muslim extremists, raiding mosques, making arrests, pulling in and questioning known radicalized people on watch lists, and poring over Islamic chatter. No one was looking for Mexicans. Jack estimated that the bomb was possibly only hours, but no more than a day away from being fully assembled and ready. He was sure that by morning it would be loaded into the van and on its way. From what Miguel had confessed, the target was New York City. There was no reason to doubt that. With no time to waste, Jack slid back down the roof and jumped to the ground. He moved quickly, but as quietly as possible, as he made his way back from the building with the bomb to where he had left Angela. When he got to where she was supposed to be, he didn't see her. He looked around when he heard dripping water and finally spotted her, bathed in moonlight, just climbing up out of a large metal tank that had been cut in half and was lying on its side. It was partially filled with rainwater. Dripping wet, Angela climbed out over the side. Jack was incredulous. "What the hell are you doing?" She frowned at him like it was the stupidest question she'd ever heard. "Washing off all the blood." She shook water off her hands. "I don't want to get blood all over the interior of my truck." In an odd, crazy way, he had to admit that it made sense. He ushered her a safe distance away from the building with the nuke. He had seen at least a couple of dozen men inside working to assemble the bomb. There could easily have been more that he couldn't see through the small hole. He had seen a lot of AK-47s leaning against posts and tables. He didn't know if there were men other than the two Angela had killed who might also be walking around, taking a cigarette break, or even walking guard duty. If there were, he didn't want to run into them. He scanned the area one last time, then pulled his phone out and pressed one of the numbers he had programmed in. When a woman answered, Jack gave her the code in. She checked briefly, then asked what she could do for him.
"Give me Devorah. It's an emergency."
It was the middle of the day in Israel, so he expected she would be available. As Jack waited, he continued to watch for trouble. Angela was doing the same. Devorah quickly picked up.
"Jack, what's the emergency?"
"I'm in Milford Falls."
"Did you find Angela Constantine then?"
"Yes. Listen to me. You need to tell the Americans to activate Nest. They're going to need to get people in here."
There was a brief moment of stunned silence before she came back.
"The nuclear emergency support team? Has there been a radiological accident?"
The purpose of Nest was to be ready to send teams to recover any kind of nuclear material or devices like dirty bombs. He wasn't sure they were prepared for a fully functional live nuclear bomb, but if anyone was prepared to deal with it, it was the Nest team.
"No. Listen to me. We've got a live atomic bomb."
Again, there was a moment of silence.
"All right. We're contacting them right now. Is the site secure?"
"Hell no, it's not secure. The device is shortly going to be on its way to New York City."
"They monitor for radiation levels all over the place around the East Coast."
"This is a plutonium bomb. Plutonium is hard to detect in the first place, and this one has a lead tamper around the pit. From the looks of the sophistication of it, they will probably use other shields to protect it on their way to New York City. These people know what they're doing. I expect their truck is shielded. Any radiation will likely be tightly contained. It's highly unlikely it would be detected. But even if some new super-secret detection equipment did pick it up before it got into the city proper, that will be little consolation if they set it off when they're intercepted. The blast radius, the firestorm, and the radiation would devastate a vast area. They don't need to have a direct hit. With a nuke, close will do."
"I've got red lights going up across the board with our contacts," Devorah said. "Do you have coordinates?"
"I took the coordinates right at the site of the building they're in. Sending them now."
"Okay. Got them."
Jack knew that once the authorities secured the weapon, they would need to get the Nest team in to disarm it.
"Let the Americans know that it's not likely to have any fail-safe systems, but I would bet they have contingency plans for an attack."
"I've got other operators notifying the DHS, NSA, and the FBI, as well as the Pentagon, as we speak. I don't know what kind of technical team they are going to want to deploy."
"I suspect that whoever is closest will go in."
"All right, Jack. We're on it. We've got our entire center activated. We're lighting up the Americans."
Jack let out a sigh of relief.
Thanks, Deborah. I'll stay on site until they get here just to make sure the terrorists don't leave with the bomb. If they do, we'll follow them and I'll update you with any information. Call me if you need anything more.
Stay well back from the area.